Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, August 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we wrap up the second full week of shows here on Bang the Book Radio. If you've missed anything, obviously the NFL preseason stuff, last week's NFL preseason stuff doesn't have a whole lot of value. This week's won't have a whole lot of value next week. But all the college football stuff that we have talked about has had a lot of value. So all shows and segments are posted over at bangthebook.com. You can find shows and segments on iTunes, Spreaker, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, Overcast. Wherever you look for us, you're probably going to find us. So just to let all of our listeners know that, you know, just because we're on to a new day and we've got the daily radio show doesn't mean that you can't go back and check out everything that we've already done here on the program so far. And we're going to add a couple of strong segments to it here today. Very, very excited about this first one. I'll be joined by Lockie Lockerson, real name Ken Barkley, who contributes to bangthebook.com and also the Action Network. We'll chat with him about Heisman dark horses, the Pac-12, and then also dark horses for the national championship. Last week, we talked a little bit about both of those topics, the futures and the Heisman. Today, we'll finish up those two topics and then also chat the Pac-12. Second part of today's show, we'll be joined by Tony George, professional handicapper from Doc Sports. We'll talk NFL preseason with him, looking at a couple of games here for tonight and tomorrow. Then also talk with him about some of the college football futures that he's put in. And he's out in Vegas now full-time again, so we'll get to chat with him about that, what he anticipates here for the upcoming season. Over at bangthebook.com, tons of great stuff. My daily MLB picks and tips piece updated for today. We started unrolling NBA season previews from Admir Aljic, so we've got those over there for the Atlantic Division. We'll do the Central Division here today. We'll have NHL season previews coming out very soon. WNBA, golf, NASCAR, MMA, you name it, we've got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. And finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up using that promo code BANG100, you'll get 100% deposit match bonus for the new look, redesigned sportsbook over there. So you want to make sure that you check that out. Two guests coming your way here on this Friday edition of the show. The first, the great Ken Barkley, a.k.a. Lockie Lockerson. Ken, how's it going today, man?
I'm good, Adam. Can you believe, I know you were promoting NBA win totals and stuff. It's just crazy that not only are we talking about that in, what is it, August 17th, and we're talking about NBA win totals and stuff, but not only that we're talking about it, but that a lot of people care about it this time of year. It's always really crazy. You know, everybody always talks about how popular the NBA has become and stuff, but just you really see that manifest itself in the gambling content too, where, you know, July and August, it's like, okay, summer league's over. What do we know about rookie of the year? What do we know about win totals? It's crazy to hear you promote that and think about that.
It is really funny because, you know, we talk a lot on this show about the accelerated timelines for college football in the NFL with season win totals coming out basically in late April and early May. Now you've got games of the year lines out. You got week one lines out in late May, basically it feels like, for college football in the NFL. And then you kind of sit on them for a little while. Now we're getting closer to games. But in the meantime, as you mentioned, now NBA season win totals have come out. And it's just the nonstop nature of this business. And I know you're doing this full time for the first time here. You had a regular job last year. Now you're doing this as a job with writing and betting and all the things that you're doing. It's remarkable the way that this industry has grown since I started doing the shows, since I got involved with it, and to see that more people are probably going to take the path that you're taking and do this full time, I think speaks to that nature of things just never slow down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I'm glad you brought up, yeah, like this is kind of my first year really doing this. I mean, seriously is the wrong word, because then somebody could be like, what, were you not serious last year when you were doing well and working really hard and stuff? Like, yes, but I mean, it's a lot different to balance a 60-hour a week job that's incredibly high stress with also doing gambling content at the same time. Just even the amount I've learned in the last 9 months about just successful strategies and unsuccessful strategies. And honestly, you know, if anybody, I think a lot of people have entrepreneurial tendencies, especially in this generation and in 2018, where it's like, oh, it'd be really cool to go out and do my own thing, or it'd be really cool to, you know, leave my 9-to-5 job and, you know, whatever, live on the beach or something. But really, the people who have aspirations with gambling content, like my, just through a year, my not advice or even I guess what I've learned the most is you are going to fail a ton. You're going to do a lot of things that you think are correct that are not even close to correct. You're going to, and that is a good thing. You should experiment with all kinds of, whether it's modeling techniques or handicapping techniques or exploring what stats are actually predictive versus the 99% of them that are not predictive, all that kind of stuff. Like, you're just, if you're thinking about doing this even more than you're doing right now, maybe you obviously keep your job, which would, for a lot of people, I would recommend, you know, if you keep your job and you want to supplement that with working on gambling more, like my, you know, my advice would be like, you're going to fail a lot and that's okay. Like, try a bunch of stuff, really get to the bottom of like, what's the most effective.
Well, from one grinder to another, I mean, you know, I do a lot of high volume for bangthebook.com, and I know listeners and readers have always been very thankful of that. You know, I know how hard you're working at it. I know that you're always working on a different project, it seems like, or writing something. So I know that you're destined for a lot of success here in this industry because you put in the time, you put in the work ethic. And like you said, you know, you're willing to learn from your mistakes and adapt and evolve and evaluate. And that's really what it's about here. And, you know, I know that we're kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent from what we plan to talk about here today, and we will get to that in a minute. But it's a very important thing for our listeners out there. I know we've got a Bang the Book writer who wants to get into this full time the way that you're doing it. I'm sure that there are listeners that want to get into it in the same way. And, you know, it's sort of the thing, you know, with Knish in Rounders. He's talking about, you know, how he was showing Mike the life off of his own beats and the things where he made mistakes, where he had shortcomings. And that's what it is. You know, if you come into this thinking you know it all, you're going to find out in a hurry that you sure as hell don't. But if you're willing to learn as much of it as you can, that's how you set yourself up for success. And I know you're doing a great job of that. I feel like I've done a pretty good job of that over the years here. And, you know, I think that it's we've kind of found our niche, and I'm very happy to say that, you know, I think you and I both enjoy what we do for a living.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I mean, I enjoyed the job that I did previously. Where I am right now in my life, I like this much more. And I, you know, I definitely don't regret the decision that I've made. But I think, you know, even just the example that you used, which is, you know, to be honest, a character from a movie is as like sort of an example of, you know, like somebody that we like model ourselves after or whatever, or that other people model themselves after. Like, you have to be really careful about glamorizing almost like that lifestyle, even that's represented in the movie. Like, I think there are a ton of people that watch Rounders and want to be those characters. And like, that's really fun until you owe $20,000 to a bookie and you don't pay your mortgage and you're out on the street. And if you have responsibilities and a family or whatever, like, it's just a lot of those movies are really fun. I love Rounders. I've watched it a million times when I was in college, you know, just like a lot of people did. But it's almost like the things in the movie that appear fun, if you really kind of play them out to their conclusion, and like, God forbid you ever think about like a 10-year plan in retirement or something, like, it's just, you know, it all falls apart really fast, like a house of cards. So I think one thing, you know, if you're somebody out there who's thinking about, just forget, you know, like quitting your job or whatever, just spending more time doing this stuff. I think you can't put the cart before the horse. Like, if you want to really write about content and podcasts and stuff, the first question to ask yourself is, okay, like, what am I good at? Like, what do I have an edge at? And it, you know, the most, you know, important characteristic you can have in that situation is honesty and transparency and, you know, really like understanding your self-worth in some of these areas. Like, there are things in gambling that I don't know a lot about, and that's okay for me to say out loud. There are things in gambling that I'm really successful at, like props and futures, and, you know, sort of, you know, play to your strengths. Like, you can't produce a lot of content if you're not an expert at anything. You know, it's okay to be an expert, or even like, you know, whatever the level before expert is, above amateur at a couple things, and you can grow a couple more. But, you know, really kind of understanding, am I really good at this, or am I just kind of getting lucky? Am I, you know, what are my processes like? Like, what are the things that I can offer to other people who are trying to learn about it?
Well, and like you said, I mean, one of the things that you excel at, futures and props, and that's one of the things we really try to drive home on this show here, is that it's not just as simple as going out there and betting games against the spread, betting money lines for the NHL or Major League Baseball. You have to have a diversified portfolio where you find a lot of investment opportunities, because you have to scour the entire market for value. And Ken, that's something that you do a really good job of. So as we actually get into this college football conversation here, and again, you and I could talk about, you know, this and the industry and breaking into it and all that in its own separate podcast. But I know we talked a little bit about the Heisman Trophy last week. We talked about some of the favorites, some of the nice prices that you like of some of those guys that are in that, you know, 12-25-1 range and that type of area. So let's go ahead and throw a refresher out there for our listeners first. Then we'll throw in a couple different names and a couple different ideas.
Sure. So I think one thing I get, and I admittedly am really bad sometimes on podcasts, because I tend to just go. I have my 100 talking points in my head. My brain's moving you know, 100 miles a minute, and I just want to get all the words out there as fast as possible. And I think sometimes what happens is when I finish talking about maybe it's three or four or five players that I like, I sort of neglect big picture questions that people might have in those same markets. So, you know, I'll talk about, you know, my refresher from last week would be, you know, okay, so here are a few guys I like to win the Heisman. I like Will Grier. I like Trace McSorley. I actually like Dwayne Haskins a little bit, just like the more you look into their schedule and how he could build a statistical profile. So Grier, McSorley, Haskins, I love Justin Herbert, actually. We can talk about, we're going to talk about Oregon a lot, I think, in the next 20 to 30 minutes. DeAndre Swift at 40-1, I really like. So, you know, these are guys, what do they all have in common, right? So they, first of all, their quarterbacks are running backs, which you basically have to be if you're going to bet something in this market. Just that's what history tells us. That's the players that end up not only winning the award, but even getting invited to the ceremony. And these are players who play on teams that are more likely than not to win 9 or 10 games this year. Obviously, you know, with Swift, that's sort of a given that Georgia's going to win at least 10 games. The other ones are sort of on that 9-win, you know, sort of middle area where, yeah, it could be 8, it could be 10, but, you know, the win totals are hanging around 8.5. And these are players that are able to accumulate massive statistical profiles. You know, Trace McSorley is going to have a lot of stats this year. Will Grier is going to have a crazy amount of stats because they're going to need to score a million points to win games. And they play in the Big 12 where everybody plays bend but don't break defense and gives up a bunch of yardage anyway. You know, Oregon, same thing. I think Justin Herbert's going to be able to put up a lot of stats. So, you know, these are sort of the criteria that I work with. And one thing that always ends up coming up is, well, wait, you didn't talk about that guy. You didn't talk about, you know, whoever it is. And, you know, sometimes that's kind of my fault because it's almost just as important to address why you don't like people as why you do like people. So just, you know, I think with college football, especially this year, you do have to proceed, I think, with the idea that Alabama and Clemson are going to win 12 a lot of the time. You know, maybe you call it 11.5 because maybe one of them drops a regular season game or they both maybe drop one as possible, but just the way the schedules work out, it's not even with Clemson, it's a little more about talent, but it's not even really about talent compared to previous years. It's just like the way the schedules work out for both of these teams. You almost have to assume 12-0 and you almost, whether you do playoff odds or championship odds or Heisman odds, you know, like you kind of just have to slot those two teams in. And I think you have to slot Georgia in kind of right behind them as this unchanging thing. And, you know, so it's like, if you know those three teams are going to be three teams that accumulate 10 wins, that play in a big conference, then it sort of naturally begs the question, well, what about those players to win the Heisman? And I think with those three schools specifically, I think what you have a big issue with is you have 20 uber talented people sharing reps. You know, Alabama, Tua is one of the favorites, but I mean, he's going to win the starting job initially. But if we remember from last year, I mean, I actually kind of talked myself into Jalen Hurts last year, which was my mistake. I actually, you know, will fully own up to that because what I sort of failed to realize was the extent to which Alabama was going to play in games that they were up by a million. And when you're up 28-0 and 35-0 and a million to nothing in these games, like who is really going to accumulate the statistics? Either backups or running backs. And I think with Alabama's schedule actually being kind of easy this year, the idea that Tua can accumulate the statistical profile necessary to win the award is pretty small. So you go, okay, maybe you don't like Tua very much. What about the running backs? What about Damian Harris, who I've kind of gone back and forth on? Damian Harris basically averages like 9 carries a game. And that's unlikely to change when all of the blue chip running backs behind him are still there. So, I mean, you know, it's sometimes I talk about guys I like and it's, well, why don't you like these guys? Like, I think Alabama is a rough situation to win a Heisman Trophy in this year because of how it all shakes out. Never mind the fact they have an offensive coordinator who we aren't really sure is any good anyway. Clemson kind of has the same problem, right? First of all, we have no idea who's going to play quarterback for them. You know, if you think it's going to be Trevor Lawrence, great. Does he have enough guys to throw to accumulate a statistical profile, or are they going to be more conservative with him and run it with Feaster and Etienne who are going to split carries? Do you really want either of those guys? So Georgia, kind of the same problem. Although the reason I like Swift is just his price is, I think, just a little too high compared to the likelihood that he'll win. You know, you have Jake Fromm who everybody thinks they're going to expand the playbook, but you know, Fromm or Swift, you know, how did like, does one kind of take votes away from the other one? I think that's like legitimate cause for concern. And those are your three teams that are the most likely to be in sort of that Heisman group of teams. So I think, you know, sometimes I only talk about the guys that I like, but I think sometimes it's important to look at, you know, here are a lot of the favorites that play for these big teams that, you know, I don't think they can really fit the criteria of what a winner would look like.
Well, and to bring it to another team here that has a lot of college football playoff aspirations, a lot of people may put them there, and we'll talk about them in a few minutes here, the Washington Huskies. So you've got Jake Browning at 25-1. You've got Myles Gaskin at 125-1. We touched on Gaskin a little bit last week as one of those long shot bomb kinds of prices to look at. Why is Gaskin 125 with Browning 25? I mean, this is a Washington team that ran the ball 473 times last year against 348 pass attempts. How is Jake Browning going to put up the numbers necessary to have that Heisman kind of profile? You're more likely to see that from somebody like Gaskin. So it's not just a matter of looking at these guys, these teams, the schedule, this kind of thing. You look at the composition of the offense, which is exactly what you were talking about there in terms of, you know, looking at some of those teams where they're going to be balanced run pass. West Virginia, probably not so much. They lost a 1,000-yard rusher in Justin Crawford. They're going to have to score a million points, like you said. Will Greer can put up numbers. Will Washington put up numbers? Yeah, they probably will. The problem is their numbers will be split between the passing game and the running game. So Browning, to me, effectively has really no shot at the Heisman Trophy, whereas Gaskin, based on the price, you can justify throwing some beer money on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the for everything you said is pretty accurate. I think the way to think about the Heisman, you know, is basically the confluence of player talent, team talent, and price. Those, you know, where those three things come together, you know, that's how you can find the things that are the most valuable. So, yeah, I mean, you look at when we talk about title, we'll talk about, you know, who would you rather have considering the price? Would you rather have Browning at 25 or Gaskin at 125? I mean, you could make a really sound argument that the answer is neither. I think that is like the other choice that enters into this. And, you know, the way the voting works and there's, you know, college football fans are a crazy bunch. There's definitely a lot of opinions that it, the way the voting is organized for Heisman makes West Coast players very, very unlikely to win the award. This came up with McCaffrey a couple of years ago. And I think there is some truth to that. Basically, USC quarterbacks are basically the only West Coast players that have ever won the award, especially in modern times. So I think, you know, that it, you have, that has to kind of factor in when you weigh the idea that somebody like Khalil Tate could be a favorite when, first of all, his team may not win 10 games and also that he plays for Arizona. I mean, that has to be a negative. And if you're going to take West Coast players, I think they have to be massive long shots to even kind of merit consideration. Gaskin definitely qualifies. Every projection I've seen from, you know, there's all these Twitter accounts that do their own kind of like modeling and stuff like that to just make win total projections and power ratings and that kind of stuff. They have Washington basically in the top five almost unanimously. So it can't be that bad to, you know, take a 125-1 price on a team that's that likely to win 10 games. So, you know, for that reason, I kind of agree with you.
All right, so speaking of triple-digit prices, you and I were talking before we came on the air here. There are a couple of quarterbacks in the triple-digit range, ironically enough, the two schools go by the same acronym, that you think have a decent chance at making a little bit of Heisman noise. So who are those two quarterbacks?
Yeah, so I mean, when you get to that range, like, you know, even 75-1 or higher, 100-1 or higher, each of the last few years that I've been doing this, you do see some attractive candidates there. You know, we sort of famous a couple of years ago, Lamar Jackson opened 110-1 when he hadn't like really played meaningful football yet and didn't really understand the playbook the year before. Bryce Love, 175-1, replacing McCaffrey. You know, these were prices that sort of looked appealing. I mean, I had both tickets and in Bryce Love, it sort of had sort of a tragic ending. But this year, I would say the prices from 100-200 and higher are a little less enticing for a lot of reasons. You see a lot more wide receivers listed there, which are just the odds that they can even get invited are so unlikely. Their quarterbacks are so much more likely to get invited. If you look at, you know, David Sills versus Will Greer, for example, like the likelihood that Sills can win without Greer having a profile that's infinitely more productive is so low. But there are a couple triple digits that I think, I mean, people always like a long shot, right? So here are some things, at least prices to think about in the range of 100-200. Compared to some other ones that probably have no chance of winning. Jake Bentley is a little interesting. I know people are going to say like, oh, Will Muschamp, that offense never does anything. They play in the SEC. They have to play Clemson. They have to play Georgia. These are all good things to these are all truths, but at least there's some unknown new offensive coordinator. He didn't really get to play a full season with Deebo Samuel at all. I think Samuel was injured week 2, week 3, something in that zone. You know, basically players were dropping all around him. They only really lose tight end and they have a pretty competent replacement. Like I said, new offensive coordinator. I mean, you play in the SEC, there's going to be plenty of high profile situations to accumulate stuff. 125-1 is at least, it's a little interesting. And people, you know, you eye roll and Will Muschamp and all that. Like, yeah, he's 125-1. I'm not saying it's -110 and you should go out and bet the mortgage on it. Like, there's a difference. Price matters. So 125-1 on him is at least a little interesting. Gaskin, we already talked about too. There's something about JT Daniels that I think is interesting here. I mean, just, you know, sort of throw out freshman and last year and all this stuff. And just, if you look at just the history of the Heisman, the quarterback of USC sort of has a built-in advantage over a lot of programs just by being the quarterback of USC. And I think that has value. And it's not like USC is going to be awful this year. The way they recruit, it's almost impossible that they could be awful. Awful for them this year is going to be like maybe 7 wins, but probably like 8-4. That's like the floor. And I know a lot of people are really down on them this year. Colin Wilson, and who we have on the show sometimes, and I had a discussion about this where I sent him a note and I said, like, is there any value here whatsoever because he's the quarterback of USC? And he was, I mean, he was an immediate no shot. If you read the camp reports, it sounds like he's been amazing. Obviously, you have to take that with a grain of salt because reporters are very unlikely to say negative things about the colleges that they cover because they get access. So, but him compared to the other quarterbacks has been really interesting. I think he's clearly the starter right now from everything I've read. And it's just, it's a little interesting. You have a team with a top 5, top 10 recruiting profile. They are pretty likely to make their conference championship game. 9-10 wins is sort of an average season. And he's 125-1. I think that's kind of interesting.
With regards to Jake Bentley here, I actually went to South Carolina's spring game. And one of the things I noticed right away is that they're trying to play with a lot more tempo on offense. I imagine that they've carried that through here to fall camp. So, you know, Bentley should get more plays, more opportunities to rack up numbers. I also think that for Muschamp here, who 2 years ago had the youngest defense in college football in terms of the number of freshmen that they were playing, now he's had 3 years to build up some depth there in Columbia. So maybe they do go to that up-tempo offense, and, you know, maybe that is something that does help Bentley and his numbers out a little bit. I like what you said about Daniels as well. I mean, obviously he's a great unknown, but, you know, there is that perception of Southern Cal quarterbacks. One other name I want to throw out there for you. This one's not a quarterback, he's a running back. So, you know, there may be a little bit of an uphill climb here, but Justice Hill at Oklahoma State, you see him on the board at 5 dimes right now, 135-1. This is an Oklahoma State team that does not have Mason Rudolph this year. They do not have experience at the quarterback position. And last year, even with Mason Rudolph, 505 rushing plays, 503 passing attempts. So Justice Hill's going to get his chances to put up numbers here. Almost 1,500 yards last year, 15 touchdowns. Any thought to value on him?
It's interesting. I think, you know, a lot of people, because they know I think a lot about the Heisman, at least, and write a lot about it. They're always bringing up the long shot, right? Like, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? I had somebody bring up, I think it was, Derek King, the quarterback for Houston, like all these guys where it's like, oh, like maybe if they got this, and it's like, well, probably not. I think the always my first question back to that person, AJ Dillon was definitely somebody that a couple people brought up, who I don't even think is listed in a lot of places to win. And the first question back to those people is always, do you think there's a realistic shot the team wins 10 games? And, you know, I think with Justice Hill, that's the same problem you have. Like, this, there's really no way this isn't a down year for Oklahoma State compared to the past couple. Like, you just lose too much. And I understand that Gundy's a really good coach. They recruited a high level, the middle of the conference, basically everyone after Oklahoma is about the same. So, you know, why not Oklahoma State to emerge as that second best team? But I think the likelihood they win 10 games this year is really low. So that's, you know, knock number one, you have to win 9 or 10 just to get into the conversation. I thought Bill Connolly, who obviously most people know who follow college football, does a really good job over at SB Nation. You know, he sort of had some numbers on Hill, you know, off the top of my head, I think marginal efficiency is the, you know, obviously one of the primary stats that we look at with running backs. Explosiveness is the other one. You know, like Justice Hill got a lot of carries last year, and I think he was something like bottom 5 in the country in efficiency. He made a lot of explosive plays, but you kind of have to ask yourself, you know, was that more about his talent and his explosiveness, or was that more about the way the offense was set up with Rudolph and spreading guys out wide and run pass option with really, really dangerous weapons, the two most dangerous of which are, you know, James Washington and Aitman, won't be on the team anymore. So I think anytime you look at, obviously there's a reason these guys are long shots. I think with Justice Hill, it's, can they win 10 games and how much of his success was based on him and how much was based on Rudolph and Washington.
All right, let's transition over to the Pac-12 here. I really don't think there's a whole lot that needs to be said about Washington. I mean, they are the clear class of this conference on paper. They're a team that has a very good chance of making it to the college football playoff, and they would be a favorite over anybody from the Pac-12 South in terms of looking at preseason power ratings. And realistically speaking, I don't think it would be that close to anybody else in the Pac-12 South in that title game. So let's go to Stanford here, and let's talk about the Cardinal real quickly. Bryce Love, as you mentioned, you know, he is the Heisman favorite here this year, ran for over 2,000 yards last year, over 2,100 yards, actually, and 19 touchdowns. A lot of us in the gambling community really thought that David Shaw needed to go with KJ Costello at quarterback instead of Keller Crist. That now they actually are going to go with Costello, it seems, although they do have some young guys that could be pushing him throughout the course of the season. What are your thoughts on Stanford here, Ken? I mean, what can this team upend Washington? Can this team make some national noise? Or are they probably going to win 9 games with Bryce Love getting invited to New York City?
Man, Stanford, I think I've spent not more time on them than most other teams, but I have spent a lot of time on Stanford because the one thing that stands out to you immediately when you look at the bigger markets, playoff and title and stuff, is their odds are incredibly long right now compared to some of the other teams. It's, you know, if you want to play the who would you rather have game, would you rather have Washington at 15 or Stanford at 70? I mean, the difference there is massive. You could argue not an incredibly big talent discrepancy. If you take the incoming recruiting class out of the picture, they both basically recruited at the same level. You know, coaching, obviously, Chris Peterson, one of the best. David Shaw, right up there, too. I mean, Stanford, I believe they, in S&P Plus, which is, you know, sort of a rating system that a lot of people use, I believe they're like the fifth most successful program of the decade. So Stanford, you know, as much as, you know, they sort of have the pedigree from pre-Harbaugh as, you know, a smart school that only performs a little bit. You know, David Shaw has really taken this program to a level that's elite. And so it is kind of interesting. I think the thing with Stanford that there are two, you know, sort of minuses this year. When you talk about sort of the criteria for an ultra successful season, do they recruit really well? Yes, they recruit well enough to put up a successful season. Do they have coaching that can take those players and transition them to successful college players? Of course. Yes, they do. Schedule is always the third criteria. And I mean, they got a rough schedule. You talk about opening San Diego State and USC, like right out of the gate. They have to go to Oregon, and I think an awful spot for them with Oregon basically being at home for a month to prep for the game. You know, I think obviously just like the way the Pac-12 shakes out this year and the way their schedule shakes out, it's like there's sort of a reason they're 70-1. You want to believe in them. Their defense also was like oddly bad last year. And it was, you know, everything I could read about their defense was basically, yeah, they have so much returning production back, so many starters back. But there's sort of not really an explanation for the drop in production. So it's sort of this weird, you know, fog hangs over this defense where I don't know what to expect. I think Stanford is, they are one of those teams though, where, you know, if you're sort of looking at what are the most talented teams that have the longest odds to win the title, where it wouldn't shock you if the team made the playoff. I think Stanford 70-1 is kind of in the mix there.
All right. So let's go to Oregon then, because as you mentioned, they've got a month or so to prepare for that game on September 22nd. Oregon plays Bowling Green, Portland State, San Jose State. Hide the wife and kids from those three games, because all three of them project to be very, very lopsided scores, especially with Justin Herbert now back at quarterback. And Oregon was a much different team when he was healthy. Obviously, the schedule softened up a little bit in some of those games when he was there as well. Jim Leavitt fixed this defense in a hurry. Dramatic turnaround. They were 1.3 yards per play better in 2017 than they were in 2016. I know the Ducks are a team that's very high on your list this year.
Yeah, so I think, you know, again, we'll play who would you rather have. You know, Oregon's hanging out in triple digits right now. I think it was 110 last time I checked. You know, we'll go through the boxes again, except I'll have a little more interesting things to say about this team. You know, do they recruit at a high enough level to make the playoff, you know, in terms of what we know about teams that do that? Absolutely. Do they have the coaching staff that can take players and convert them into productive college players? And this is where, you know, I think this is where my lack of experience in this sport will show through a little more, because all I can know about Mario Cristobal is kind of what I read. So, you know, I wasn't there when he was at Florida International. I wasn't watching those games. I wasn't reading stories about him. You know, I know basically what his path has been, which is basically being mentored by great college coaches, including Nick Saban, and being an elite recruiter for Nick Saban, and taking a Florida International team that had basically lost like 25 games in a row and returning them to a bowl game, and I think a piece of a conference title, then basically having one bad year and getting fired. That's his only head coaching experience, by the way. That's all we really know about him as a head coach, aside from the bowl game last year. And you can make all kinds of excuses about the bowl game last year, because Willie Taggart, who was only there for a year, had just left. You sort of thrust people into an uncomfortable situation, and they got wrecked by Boise State. So really, like, you know, I know people want to say bad things about this guy, but all I know is what I can read. And all I read about is, you know, basically a guy who took a group of five team, a current group of five team, and led them to unprecedented success, and then had one bad year and was fired, and then coached a bowl game last year. That's all I can read about him. I have nothing else to form an opinion on other than that he's basically universally regarded as an elite recruiter. That's all I have. So when I look at that, I say, well, this is a guy that at least deserves a Power Five coaching opportunity based on that resume. I don't know if it's going to be a successful one, but there's at least an unknown quantity there that I think is a little appealing compared to maybe other coaching quantities where it's, we know that guy is just not very good. We know that, you know, the team is at least going to perform at an average or below average level compared to their recruiting. We really don't know that with him. And I think that makes them very interesting. So, you know, recruiting, yes, coaching, a mystery, but not a no. Schedule, I think, is where it gets really interesting. So we already talked about the opening games. Bowling Green, who I actually think will be better this year, love their win total over, but you're playing Oregon. That's sort of a moot point. Portland State and San Jose State, yikes. So not only are those three games that give Justin Herbert a chance to get 25 touchdown passes before they go to week four, but, I mean, Oregon's 3-0 there. The other thing is they never leave. So they're going to be in Eugene from now until September 29th when they go to Cal. Never leave the confines of home. You have three games where basically you don't have to show any offensive wrinkles whatsoever to win those games handily. Your talent mismatch will basically dictate the score. They get a month to basically prepare for Stanford. Stanford's the fourth game. I think that's like a really bad spot when you think about for Stanford, when you think about the Cardinal has to play San Diego State and then USC, and then they get some kind of FCS team, I think, somebody that, you know, they can kind of handle and get ready for Oregon. But, you know, they're going to have to show a lot on film just to win the first two games. Oregon is going to be – basically, this is going to be the best version of Oregon you can get at this point unless they have a massive injury. So I think when you think about the tough games on Oregon's schedule, the fact that there are really two of them and that this one sets up so well augurs well for them. The other tough game on their schedule is Washington. They also get them at home 2 weeks later, actually. Washington is on a back-to-back on the road. They go to UCLA, and then they have to go to Oregon the next week. So at least like a little bit of a minus there. The fact that you get them at home instead of having to go there is obviously massive. Those are the two tough games. Like that's not it, but that's by far their two toughest games. At Arizona and at Utah are the two toughest road tests. But talent-wise, you know, we don't really know what Arizona is this year. I really like them. You know, their schedule is insanely easy also, but you know, there isn't a big talent mismatch there. I think Utah is a little bit more of an unknown than people would like to admit. I think they're, you know, at least at the same level as Oregon. So there's really not a lot here when you look at the schedule. This feels like 10 or 11 wins a lot of the time, which I know people think is nuts to say that about, again, Mario Cristobal coaching Oregon. But, I mean, I'm looking at the schedule and I'm reading about him and I'm doing analysis. I wasn't there. A lot of people seem to have a negative opinion of him. You know, I can't know what that stems from. All I can do is do research and tell you what I find. And I think there is a lot of value on Oregon.
When you've got a head coach like Mario Cristobal, you kind of look for those watershed moments where you find out a lot about a guy. Like you mentioned, they're home for a month before they play that Stanford game. If they beat Stanford, I don't think we find out a whole lot about Mario Cristobal. If they beat Stanford and then go on the road and beat Cal the next week, we find out a lot about Mario Cristobal because that Stanford-Oregon rivalry runs deep back to the days of Andrew Luck and all that kind of thing. If they can put that aside, go on the road for the first time and beat a Cal team that returns 18 starters for second-year head coach Justin Wilcox, that's where we know something about Cristobal. So Cal here, 5-7 last year. They've been to one bowl game since 2011. I know a lot of people are pretty high on the Golden Bears as well.
Yeah, I mean, Cal is one of those interesting teams. This is not a name drop, but I just, you know, I still, from my days working at ESPN, I still text with Stanford Steve sometimes, and you know, great guy and knows a ton about college football, obviously played Stanford, but Cal is like his all-in on team this year. I think he even went on television and said that Cal was going to win the Stanford game this year, which probably got him a lot of crap, but I think Cal's biggest problem, so there's a lot to like about Cal. First of all, they're 2000-1 to win the title, which is probably a little bit too high. They're 27-1 to win the Pac-12, which is a little too high until you remember that they play in a division with Washington, Stanford, and Oregon. A little hard to make the conference title game when those three teams are above you and, you know, you could argue peaking. Good coordinators. Everybody's back for their second year. Bo Baldwin's like this really interesting OC who played at, you know, coach at Eastern Washington. It feels like all those coaches have kind of moved on to different things, but, you know, scored a million points a game on a red field. That's always pretty fun. You know, there's a lot to like returning starters. I think the biggest problem I have with them, honestly, is just, are their players that good? And we're talking about, you know, I think Cal's going to win 6-7 games. Like, I think that's going to happen. But the difference between winning 6 or 7 games and winning your division, the difference between winning 6 or 7 games and playing in a New Year's Six bowl game, you know, that's sort of the leap that we're talking about. I think with Cal, I don't think there's any question that they're at least a 5-6-7 win team a huge amount of the time. I'm just not sure with the recruiting classes that have come in and, you know, like just the talent that's on the field, I'm just not sure it's good enough to compete in some of these games. That's sort of my biggest issue. And I don't know if that sounds like a cop-out. It's a little general, but I mean, number one on my list of criteria for how successful a team can be is, you know, what level have you recruited at? And, you know, the fact is their recruiting classes are, you know, in the 40s, like they're just a little below a lot of the elite teams in the conference. You know, that unless your coaching is just incredible to make that difference up, and we don't know that that's true, you know, I think that's sort of an issue you have to consider.
All right, let's move on to Washington State. And then what I'll do is I'll make an executive decision here. We'll try to cover the Pac-12 South next week if you can make it back on the show, Lockie. If not, you know, we'll figure something out and maybe do an article at bangthebook.com or something like that. I want to make sure we touch on some of those triple-digit or long-shot futures prices for the national championship, because I know we've been promising those to your large swath of followers that you have out there. Let's talk Washington State real quickly. For Washington State here, you know, the offseason really couldn't have gone worse. Obviously, you had the tragic suicide of Tyler Holinsky. You had Mike Leach basically hired at Tennessee, and then Philip Fulmer came in and said, nope, we don't want him. So Mike Leach goes back to Pullman. Wazoo is in a very strange situation here going into the year.
Yeah, it's this is a really interesting team to think about for a few reasons. One, I mean, everything you just said, the losses are significant, some for really tragic reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with football. But, you know, it's sort of our job to talk about football. We're going to talk about football. You know, Minshew as an East Carolina quarterback transfer is sort of an unknown quantity. It's tough to really depend on a lot there. Really, I think this all comes down to the consistency of Mike Leach and, you know, do you believe he's one of those guys where no matter what the variables are swirling around him, including him leaving for Tennessee and then not, do you think he's the, you know, basically, can he create a culture and a program that just wins 8 or 9 games every year, no matter what, which is, you know, sort of the reputation that he has. Very, very rarely, there are a few coaches like this, you know, Kirk Ferentz is one, Frank Solich is another one, where it's like, they don't really have those slip up seasons very often. Leach has just consistently been a winner, as much as, you know, you might think he's a wacko who tweets crazy things all the time. I will say that compared to a lot of his other teams, there are definitely more swirling variables than there probably have ever been. You know, defense, they bring back a pretty reasonable amount of talent. The problem is they have a new defensive coordinator, and by all accounts, Alex Grinch was awesome. And now he's at Ohio State, where he's basically the co/backup defensive coordinator, where he'll eventually take over there. I mean, you lose an uber talented coordinator and you replace him with an average one. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't really matter how much you bring back on defense. You know, if the scheme changes, if the coaching is worse, then that's going to have an impact. And that was sort of the aspect of their team after all was said and done that you could hang your hat on a little bit. I think that's a little tricky. The one thing I will say, because a lot of people are really down on Washington State, you might be saying, well, wait, the win total 6.5. How is that ever possible, considering all the stuff we talked about? Schedule's not bad. It's really not. They only have 4 conference road games this year. Obviously, Pac-12, you split 4, some get 4, some get 5. They only have 4. and Oregon State and Colorado are two of the road games. So you're basically talking about, you know, all of your kind of toss up games against good teams basically all occur at home. Their non-conferences, Wyoming, San Jose State, and Eastern Washington. I mean, that's 3-0 a lot, 2-1 the other, whatever, 50% of the time, depending on how you feel about Wyoming. They do have to go to Wyoming to play that game. And I like Wyoming this year, but liking Wyoming and thinking they're definitely winning that game are two different things. So, you know, there's Washington State's this interesting team, really low ceiling, but to just completely dismiss them and bet and jam the win total under would also sort of go against either the tradition of Mike Leach, the returning talent on defense, and just most importantly, you know, the schedule. I mean, just, you know, try to pick out the losses, and there aren't as many as you would think.
All right. So like I said, we'll try to do Pac-12 South next week and figure out a way to talk about those teams, because this conference is just so fascinating, so intriguing, and on both sides of the divisions. So I think that we should make sure that we spend ample time on that if we're able to. But Ken, let's go ahead and run through here. You've got some long shot futures that you like from a college football playoff standpoint. Obviously, we all know who the top contenders are. I know you touched on a few teams last week that you think could have some value, teams like an Oregon, for example, that we already touched on. Notre Dame, Michigan State have been popular ones here on the show as well. Are there some others that you think are maybe worth a little bit of investment?
Sure. So, I mean, I'm in on Michigan State too. People have obviously touched on them a lot on the program, so I won't very much. They are down to 35-1, which I believe they were about 45 or 50 about a month ago. That hurts a little bit. Oklahoma, I talked about a ton last week. I just think it's way too high. They're just so much better than the rest of the Big 12. And they're 26-1. They win the Big 12. They make the playoff a really high percentage of the time too. Florida, I didn't talk about a ton last week. The SEC is really interesting. I want to spend just a couple minutes on that because some of the prices will look very appealing. Florida's 100-1 and Mississippi State's 125-1. I think those are the two that you kind of have to zero in on for long shots. I mean, the biggest problem is just, it almost doesn't matter how good they are. And what I mean by that is just, I really think you have to proceed with the assumption that Alabama wins at least 11. And I think you have to proceed with the assumption that Georgia wins at least 11. And if that happens, then it just doesn't matter how good the other team is. It just doesn't. Like, Mississippi State can have an amazing year. They can, you know, they have a ton of returning seniors. They have a returning quarterback. Joe Moorhead is at least an unknown quantity who might be amazing. You know, this is really the wave of talent cresting for Mississippi State with how they recruit. Like, this is it. This is almost the best you're going to get. And, you know, but a great year can be 10-2. A great year can be 9-3. And that's just not going to manifest itself in the future. Like, if you think Mississippi State's going to have a great year, you actually don't necessarily want to bet them to win the national title. You'd be much, much happier betting, jamming their win total over if you think that's really the case. So just the prices will look appealing. And Florida's kind of the same thing. Now, Florida's recruited at a level better than Mississippi State. They've actually, you know, they're like top 12 to 14-ish over the last 5 years. And a lot of that talent is still there. So I think there's a little bit stronger case to be made for Florida, especially who they play, two FCS teams, you know, SEC East schedule instead of West schedule, that kind of stuff. They avoid Alabama. So, you know, I think of the two, Florida is probably the most appealing price. But when you talk about the SEC, like you kind of do have to pencil in massive win total or massive numbers of wins for the teams above them, which I think like kind of explains the price more than people would think. And I think, you know, that kind of just leads me to a couple other prices. I actually talked about Cal 2000-1 last week and Baylor 2000-1. I mean, those are like super, 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 super long shots where things have to break crazy, crazy, right? The team I'd like to spend the rest of the time on, which I talked about a little bit, is Miami. And I actually just did another pass back through ACC teams to update with injuries and stuff like that. Every time I go back through the ACC, what I'm really struck by is not just that Clemson is amazing, which they are. They'll probably win every game. They'll at least win 11. Not just that, you know, the ACC has this high profile as a conference. You know, it's really Miami's going to be favored in every game this year. And I think that strikes people as a little weird because they don't put Miami in that category of the other really elite teams yet. Miami is 50-1 to win the title right now, and they're favored in every game. So you tell me kind of like just on the surface, okay, that's kind of interesting. They avoid Clemson in the regular season conference schedule. They will almost undoubtedly have to play them in the ACC title game, which did not go really well for them last year, although they had a lot of injuries going into that game. They play LSU, who's like a super unknown quantity, who I think might actually not be very good this year. Virginia Tech has to be way down this year. They lost way too many pieces. They host Florida State in what will be the next toughest game. So I think, you know, there are opportunities for high profile wins here. They're starting the season with enough buzz because of how last year went. You know, they've recruited at an uber elite level. Their recruiting profile has only gotten better in the last couple of years with Mark Richt there. A lot of returning guys, a lot of returning production. Defensive tackle's kind of the only spot where you go, I don't really know, do they have enough there? And, you know, 50-1 and you only kind of have one possibly weak spot on your team. And there are just so many things to like about Miami here. You know, and again, it's the four criteria, right? So have they recruited at an elite level? 100% they have. Do they have the coaching that can take that talent and transform it? I think there's sort of no question Manny Diaz is a great defensive coordinator. Richt, I think people still have those question marks. We talked about them last week where it's really, you know, a flip of the coin lands heads and Alabama goes to the title game that year. Flip of the coin lands tails, Georgia beats them, you know, on a last second play and maybe they win the title. So I think Richt gets a little bit of a raw deal there. Schedule A+, 100% they can run this table. And price 50-1. I mean, I think this is sort of the perfect example of the criteria coming together in a way where a price really stands out as being good value.
Lockie Lockerson does great work for us at bangthebook.com and also at the Action Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Lockie Lockerson. Ken, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me and hopefully we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Really exciting stuff there with Lockie Lockerson. And again, finding that value out there in the futures and the props betting market, definitely going to be a big help for you here. Balance your books for the college football season. One more guest here on this Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Docs Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing good, Adam. Long time no talk. I think it was March Madness the last time we visited.
Yeah, it has been a while, and I know that you're out in Vegas full-time now, so I do want to touch on that with you here for a couple of minutes before we dig into the NFL and the college football futures that we're going to talk about here in today's segment. You know, we've talked with some guests that have recently moved out to Vegas full-time, have put down some stronger roots there. Obviously, they've been out there, you know, for betting purposes and things of that sort, but now they're out there full-time, and they've kind of raved about the time change and being able to watch some of those late games and not having to go to bed at a ridiculous hour. What was it for you, Tony, that pushed you out there to Vegas full-time?
Well, I made a switch over to Doc Sports. You know, Docs has been around since 1971. And, of course, one of the longest-standing handicapping firms out there. And what Docs wanted to do was ramp it up a little bit with the media, mass media. So myself and Scott Spritzer over there. Scott Spritzer moved over there as well. A couple of national radio guys. We've got a podcast called The Vegas Beat that we do every Wednesday. I'm doing a live streaming podcast with another guy there at Docs, and we're launching a podcast page and mass media page, and we do videos from all over town, and you know, that's kind of the way the internet is going. They say that 80% of the information consumed on the internet in the next 5 years is going to be through mass media video, and so we're going to getting ahead of the curve there. And so, obviously, with my radio experience and, you know, I had a national show on SB Nation, Yahoo Sports, and Sirius the last 5 years, Wade, the guy that owns Docs, wanted me to come on board and bring some of that to the table and kind of reshuffle his lineup a little bit. He's got 12 really good handicappers over there. And having me out here in Las Vegas to do that was essential. With the acquisition of bringing me on board exclusively at Docs. And so I moved out here 1st of May, and yeah, the time change was a little rough. I've been in the Midwest, Kansas City or Lincoln, my entire life. So the local news coming on at 11 o'clock at night kind of threw me. But you're absolutely right. You get to see a lot of games here, you know, before 9 o'clock at night. Most of them are done, and that does help from that perspective. And my wife is a proxy in the Supers contest this year. She did some little preliminary work last year, so she wanted to be out here for that. So it was a family affair, and we've got the wife involved in the gambling business now as a proxy, and things are moving forward.
So what do you think here this is going to do for you from a handicapping standpoint? As you said, you've been out there since the start of May, and we've talked about this, the accelerated timelines for season win totals, games of the year lines, all that type of stuff. So now you've been able to access a lot of those numbers out there in the brick and mortars as opposed to waiting for the offshores to get on them. So Have you seen this lifestyle change pay off for you from a handicapping standpoint already, or is the jury kind of still out to see, you know, how much of an impact, positive or negative, it will have on you?
I think it's had a positive impact. Obviously, I've been coming out here 20 to 25 weekends a year for the last 20 years. Spent a lot of time out here. I do a lot of radio and various other things industry involved. But, you know, I got out here in May. I finished what? I had a top 8 finish in the NBA. I'm top 4 in Major League Baseball right now. Very respected monitors. Of course, everything's transparent and documented over at Docs as well. But, you know, kind of having your finger on the pulse of things. And every Wednesday I found a local little watering hole that has a private room on it down the street from my house. And I meet with 4 or 5 handicappers here in town and a professional bettor and an ex-odds maker every Wednesday. And we sit around and we talk about games and upcoming series. And we have like a lunch hour. And we sit around and just exchange ideas. You know, when you listen to different perspectives on it. And that's something we're going to continue through football. I pick up the lunch tab, which can be expensive at times, but nonetheless, a few of them like to day drink. But nonetheless, having my finger on the pulse, my house is basically, 2 minutes away from Santa Fe Station, which is the station's casino, and they've redone all of their casinos out here, and their sports books are absolutely fabulous. And we're going to be broadcasting out of Santa Fe Station Sportsbook. It's huge and it's super nice. And also the convenience, Adam, of actually having an app on your phone in the borders of Nevada where you can bet legally on it versus, quote unquote, offshore when you're living in Missouri. The legal aspect of it also is appealing to me as well. And you get the freshest lines right then and there, especially when they open up.
All right, well, we'll probably touch base with you on that throughout the season and see how everything's going in terms of being out there and, you know, being able to get down at the different brick and mortars and of course, how, you know, being able to watch those late games without being ridiculously tired the next day can be a pretty significant benefit for you. But let's chat some NFL preseason here, and let's go back out to the Midwest, a team that you know and saw quite a bit in your days out there, and I'm sure that you most definitely will not stop following them now that you're out in Sin City, the Kansas City Chiefs. They're up to a 1.5-point favorite, seeing a couple of 2s pop out there as well for tonight's game against the Atlanta Falcons. This number opened Atlanta -3, even money at bookmaker, now Kansas City the favorite. And, you know, these moves, a move like this would be extremely significant during the regular season. It has some level of significance here in the preseason as well. But this is basically just a commentary on what Kansas City has to achieve and what Atlanta already knows about its team, correct?
That's absolutely correct. You know, and it reminds me of the week 1 line with the Giants and the Browns. So the Giants were, you know, they opened up as -3 and they ended up catching points and they still didn't cover. Cleveland got them. But, you know, it is, if this significant of a change where a home favorite turns into a home underdog, it raises your eyebrows. You think there's some value in that line. But the key in this game is twofold. Andy Reid. Obviously, I have some ties there. I know a lot of local radio guys and beat sports writers from living in Kansas City for almost 12 years that I'm still friends with and talk to. And the key here is Kansas City is going to play their starters through the first half tonight. Andy Reid has lost more preseason games than any other coach in the history of the NFL. Now, he's been around a long time, but he never places a lot of emphasis on it. As a matter of fact, in his career, he's 38% against the spread in week 2 in the NFL preseason. That being said, he did not like what he saw out of his first team with the limited amount of time that they had against Houston. He's going to give them plenty of work tonight. And as you stated so eloquently, Atlanta knows what they have. Atlanta's obviously thin. Both teams are loaded offensively with weapons. Kansas City's a little deeper on the offensive end at the skill positions than Atlanta is, and Atlanta's not going to risk that, especially Matty Ice. So at the end of the day, you're going to see the young Mahomes in there tonight for 2 quarters. You're going to see a lot more of the first team rotating in, maybe some second-team guys that are going to see playing time in the regular season anyway versus Atlanta, who's just going to give them a couple of series and then call it good. So Kansas City liable to get up on him here. Obviously, in week one, it was apparent to everybody that watched that game that Atlanta had really no interest in doing anything but going through the motions and not getting anybody hurt and getting out of the preseason, you know, unscathed. And that's kind of Quinn's attitude tonight. We're going to give some guys some reps, but then we're going to pull them, and we're going to take a look at what we got. And you're going to have third and fourth teamers against Kansas City starters, especially that offense. I think Kansas City gets enough point production. I'm willing to lay the one and a half with them. Probably take a look at the under there. You know, although the unders have had a propensity, if you're betting them, to lose in the first couple of weeks of the preseason, that is not the case this year. Two out of three last night went over. Obviously, you saw those 57 points and 85 points. It's the New England Philly and the Green Bay game, and you've seen a lot of 13 and 6 on overs in the preseason year to date. But I think if there's anyone that you might want to take a look at, might want to be the under 41 here as well. But I think Kansas City, having the extension of their starters in there, Adam, that's really the difference in the ball game. And I like Kansas City here. And that's why that line slipped, though, just the fact that they've released what they're going to do. And Kansas City is going to have a lot more talent on the field for a longer amount of time. Thus, if you catch them under a number two, I'd go ahead and take them.
Yeah, and I previewed this game over at bangthebook.com last night, actually, and as I was writing it up, Kansas City was still in the 2-2.5 range on the plus side, and then we've seen this pretty significant move here throughout the day. So, you know, it's one of those things, though, where, and I want to get your thoughts on this here, Tony. You know, Atlanta, I was going through some of their blogs, and they're basically looking for, you know, guys that are fourth and fifth string. They're just trying to see who's going to make the 53-man and who's going to get cut from the practice squad. They know everything about basically the first and the second team. But on the Kansas City side of things here, yeah, they're playing the starters. The reason why they're playing the starters, they let Alex Smith go. He's now with the Washington Redskins. They need Pat Mahomes to get a lot of reps here with these top skill position guys. So, yeah, there's promise and potential in knowing that the first team's going to play. But at the same time, it's hardly a certainty that Mahomes looks good with this group. So do you feel like sometimes the playing time line moves are overblown a little bit?
A little bit. The one thing about Mahomes is that they were concerned about, and I have a, like I said, I spoke to a sports writer that has been up in St. Joe, Missouri. That's just north of Kansas City, about 40 miles, where they actually do their fall camp. They moved there from Wisconsin a couple, 3 years ago to a local small junior college there and build a facility. I used to go until this year. I kind of missed that, but nonetheless, the early reports was that Mahomes was turning like, even before the first game, all through fall camp, he was throwing interceptions everywhere. And that's one thing, you know, that Kansas City, you know, has relied on, and why Kansas City has been in the playoffs and been consistently a 9-10 win team when Andy Reid was there, was the fact that, Alec, you know, anybody that's successful in the NFL, they do not turn the ball over. And Kansas City did not turn the ball over with Alex Smith. Nothing flashy. They have a lot of talent at running back, and you got Watkins, a wide receiver. You have one of the best tight ends in the league with a good backup. You have a better offensive line. Defense is a whole other issue with Kansas City. But at the end of the day, they do want to give him some work. And word was, I talked to a guy yesterday that's been up there that writes for the Kansas City Journal, and he said a lot of dink and dunk passes, possession receiver type passes. They're working on the intermediate pass routes with him, the short pass routes, the screens, the timing, and you're going to see a lot of dink and dunk tonight from him. And he's not going to be down stretching the field vertically trying to hit big plays. They're just going to work on the basics tonight. And if they work on the basics with the talent level they have at the first string across the board, I still think it's a big advantage for Kansas City, although they are trying to get some chemistry developed on the offensive side of the ball with a new quarterback.
My apologies to our listeners here. I actually wrote that Chiefs-Falcons piece a couple of days ago. The one I wrote last night is for the Tampa Bay-Tennessee game tomorrow night. So my apologies for that. I don't want to mislead anybody. That was still Kansas City as a dog when I wrote up that preview. But obviously now, you know, that line has moved a little bit. But speaking of Saturday, let's touch on another game here real quickly, Tony. Cincinnati and Dallas, game 421, 422 on the board. Last week for the Cowboys, we saw Dak Prescott for a series, went 3-for-3, threw a touchdown pass. We didn't see Ezekiel Elliott. For the Bengals, we saw pretty much everybody. Andy Dalton, 6-of-8, couple touchdown passes and a pick. AJ Green had a couple of catches, a couple of explosive plays with two 20-plus yard receptions there for him. So we kind of saw everybody for Cincinnati. The Cowboys, that's not much. And to compare against those that don't, neither one of these guys, Marvin Lewis and Jason Garrett, put a whole lot of emphasis on the preseason. Marvin Lewis now exactly 531-31. Jason Garrett only 12-18 in his preseason head coaching career. So any thoughts on this game here in Big D on Saturday night?
Well, you said a lot there. Neither one of the coaches put a big emphasis on the preseason, which doesn't give you an advantage over someone, say, like Mike Zimmer or John Harbaugh, who, you know, they're win-at-all-cost coach all the time. They like to win preseason or not. So the value here lies in the totals play, in my opinion. I looked at some of these numbers first week. Both these two teams combined on defense gave up 877 yards of offense. They both scored 51 points combined in week one. They both allowed 51 points in week one. You got a total sitting here at 41 and a half. Without question in my mind, I have no desire to get near Dallas laying three against Cincinnati. I don't think there's any value in the point spread because you don't know what you're going to get. But if they stay consistent, I think both of them will score some points. Both quarterbacks look sharp in their opener. The defenses, they're going to run players in and out. Both these guys are concentrating on the defensive side of the ball. If you take a look at free agency and even their draft picks, you know, they're concentrating on defense. So they're going to do a lot of mixed combinations on defense side on both sides of the ball. And I think that's going to allow for some scoring. And what we've seen with the overs, a lot of that has to do with the tackling rules they have in place this year, protecting the quarterback. They've been very picky on pass coverage and throwing a lot of interference calls as well. So it's conducive to scoring this year, especially in the preseason. You've got about almost 65, 66% of the covers going over. The fact that these two, I watched both them play both these games this week on NFL Network. They keep rebroadcasting all the channels. I was shocked at the defense that they played, which was basically none. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I could easily see both teams in the 20s here. I have no value whatsoever on the side play, but I think over 41 here. We talked about Kansas City maybe, you know, possibly playing an under role here tonight, but tomorrow I think you're going to see some scoring over 41 in that one. That's actually an official free play that I'm going to be putting up online overnight tonight. I like the over in that game, Adam.
Now, we don't have any first half totals out for Saturday's games. First half totals are posted on the board for all of tonight's action. In terms of the preseason here, Tony, we'll wrap up the NFL preseason with this thought. When you do like a totals play like that, and you know that you're probably going to see Dak Prescott for, I would say, at least the first quarter, maybe a series into the second quarter, probably a similar thing for Andy Dalton. Do you like to go out there and just play the first half because you know that that's when the starters are going to be in? Or do you look to play the full game because, you know, in the back half of the game, you have some inexperienced defensive players and, of course, inexperienced offensive players. When you have a lack of experience, you get mistakes. So how do you sort of allocate, you know, your either your bet on the game or your opinion on the game based on looking at the first half and the second half total in the preseason?
Well, usually, you know, if you're going to play first half totals, you're going to want to play the over in the first half. I mean, in the preseason. I mean, last night, you know, we had a little bit of action on Pittsburgh and Green Bay on the first half total. But also, you know, there's value in knowing what's going to happen in the second half. You know, it seems to be that mistakes are made on the offensive side of the ball, which results in turnovers in the second half of these games. Like, they're real sloppy, and you pick up some excess scoring. So actually there's advantages on both sides of what you're talking about. First half starters, you got a total of 19.5 to 22, something like that, you know, and you got Aaron Rodgers taking on, you know, whoever. You know, last night Pittsburgh didn't have much quarterbacking, but, you know, nonetheless, you take on Foles and Brady, something like that, you know you're going to see some offensive output in the first half. But also, there's advantages on the same side of the coin, Adam, an argument we made that the second half's almost better for an over because, you know, nobody's on the same page. They're running guys in and out. you know, guys are missing assignments in terms of coverage and tackling. They're also turning the ball over and making big plays out of nowhere because of weak coverage. And so there's advantages. If I'm playing first or second half, I'm almost always playing overs.
All right, so let's transition to the college football side here for a couple of minutes, and we'll talk more college football as we go throughout the season with Tony. But I know that, Tony, you had a couple of at least a handful of futures plays that you wanted to mention here on today's show that you've been taking a look at. And like I said, I mean, you've had more access to the futures here this year being out there in Vegas than you've had in previous years, just for the simple fact that you get these numbers earlier out there, so you can look to take advantage of them before the market kind of hardens up a little bit. What have you played from a futures standpoint for college football?
Well, I had Nebraska at over 6 wins. Obviously, everybody knows I'm a Husker alum. If you don't, you've been living under a rock. I've been in this business 26 years. And I'm very sad from a sports betting perspective, Adam, to see Mike Riley go, because he was the greatest fade coach in big games of any coach in recent memory. Anytime Nebraska got in a game against a ranked opponent, they got their ass absolutely waxed. It was automatic. And so you hate to see a guy like that go from a betting perspective. From a fan perspective, having Scott Frost come to Lincoln and reestablish Nebraska, at least get them in the narrative of college football again, because they're not. Basically, they're a bottom feeder in the Big Ten. It is exciting. But what he's done there, I went to the spring game before I moved to Las Vegas, 86,000 people at the spring game, ninth largest crowd ever in the history of college football for a spring game. And they're excited about football up there. Now, this total, I got this at 6. Well, now it's up to 6.5, and you still get it around 110. But I like this total. Nebraska's got – they're going to go through – let's forget about Central Florida, you know, beating Auburn and Scott Frost. And Scott Frost is not – throwing the football, he's not running the football, winning a national title with Tom Osborne, a head coach. He's a coach. So he's not playing in the game here. But I really like Nebraska's chances this year of winning over 6.5 games. Matter of fact, I'm very excited about it. They have 15 returning starters, 8 on defense. The entire defensive line is back. They're having a 3-way quarterback battle in Lincoln. It's going to be plug and play. They're going to have more than one quarterback this year, but the front runner is Adrian Martinez, and this kid is a true freshman. He came in and played the spring game, absolute stud, a dual threat quarterback here. But you take a look at their schedule here. Yeah, they've got Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio State all on the road. But they're going to play Akron, Colorado, and Troy to open the season in Lincoln. They're going to go 3-0 there. They've got some middle games against Purdue, Minnesota, Illinois, all at home. Nebraska probably could pick up a win here. Northwestern and Iowa are winnable. I see 7 to 8 wins in a bowl game for this team this year. I got them at 6. Now they're at 6.5. They're still going to be a good football team. They're going to get to a bowl game. They've got a lot of talent there. Don't underestimate them. Do I think he works his magic? You know, remember, he took over an 0-12 team, Adam, and he got them 6 wins in a bowl game the first year before they went to the 12-0 miracle season last year at Central Florida. But it's a different ball game here, and obviously I'm not completely sold on Michigan, but I think what they're going to get is one signature key win this year, Nebraska, and I think it comes against Michigan State late in November in Lincoln. And I think that offense that he's going to run, they ran a play every 16 seconds. Every 16 seconds they were snapping the ball. Remember, he was Chip Kelly's offensive coordinator and quarterback coach when he was at Oregon. They ran a play every 16 seconds, and it's going to take a little while for teams in the Big Ten, which is black and blue football conference. We all know about it. It's going to take teams a little bit to catch up. And I think they're going to catch some people off guard this year, and they're going to win enough to get over the 6.5 wins.
Very interesting you bring up Nebraska, because they've been a pretty polarizing game on the show. We've heard both sides of the coin in terms of that season win total. So, you know, one that we will certainly revisit as we go throughout the season here. Any other college football futures that you played for the upcoming year?
Yeah, I did. I won a big one last year. I think I announced this on your show last year, West Virginia. I'm telling you right now, obviously, the Big 12, and I know the Big 12 is one of my specialty conferences, it's going to be Oklahoma and then everybody else. I mean, that's the way it's going to be this year. but I think you have a top anywhere from 15 to 18th ranked team in the country in West Virginia, and they're calling for only 7 wins. Think about that a minute. Now, while handicappers, like guys like you and me, whoever else you have on your show here, Brian Blessing, all the guests you have, great handicappers you have on your Bang the Book podcast here, we don't pay attention to national rankings because it means nothing to us. But you do kind of keep your eye on them from a public perception of how the Lions will win. But you have a top 15 to 16 ranked team here, and they're saying they're only going to have 7 wins. I'll tell you this much. West Virginia is the only team in the Big 12 to return their quarterback this year. And that quarterback is Will Grier. And he had a hell of a year last year. Great numbers. And remember, he missed the last 2 games of the bowl game last year because he was hurt. You know, this kid is a stud. Holgorsen, one thing you can count on with West Virginia, they're not going to play any defense. But they're going to want to outscore you. Well, they scored 38 points a game last year. They're going to do it again. I like them in this spot. And bear in mind also, they've got games at home against some of the best teams in the Big 12. They've got games at home, TCU, Oklahoma, Kansas State, all in Morgantown. I'm going to tell you something. Morgantown is one of the toughest road trips in college football, especially for Big 12 teams outside of Maryland and Rutgers, who are, you know, bottom feeders. All these teams are, you know, from the Midwest. You got to fly to Pittsburgh, 2-hour drive down in a bus. It's a brutal road trip. 7 wins here. This is my top play. Personally, I put 2 dimes on this out here in Las Vegas on the over 7 West Virginia. They're going to finish 2nd in the Big 12. They're going to have 8 or 9 wins this year. Mark my words. And I think they're going to open up with a big win against Tennessee on a neutral field first week of the season. They did this last year. They lost it double overtime. I think they're going to come out, open up with that big win, and I think they're going to be able to get easily 8 wins this year, probably 9.
Last thing to touch on here, Tony, with you, I know that you're in the midst of a very strong baseball season, and congratulations for that, especially with the move out to Vegas, all the things that have been going on, immersing yourself in all this preseason college football and NFL stuff. Can be very, very challenging to handicap Major League Baseball, as our listeners know, and you're doing a strong job with it here this season. So kudos to you for that. There's a play that you wanted to make sure that you mentioned here on today's show for our listeners, so feel free to let them know what that is.
Yeah, we got actually an underdog here for you, and I like it tonight. I like it a lot. You know, we're, as you mentioned, I'm plus 108 units so far year-to-date in Major League Baseball. I've got to never lay more than minus 145. Take a lot of underdogs. Take a lot of totals. And, of course, as you know, Adam, as many years as I've been doing the show with you, the old attitude, less is more. You know, don't spread it around in Major League Baseball. You know, dial in on 1 or 2 plays a day, and that is it. And that's been the philosophy this year, and it's netted us almost 60% in wins alone. So excited about the season there. That being said, Houston taking on Oakland tonight. Oakland at home is an underdog. Let's forget the Charlie Morton's on the hill for a minute. Edwin Jackson, last 4 starts, they've won them all. His last 3 starts, this is like the Animal House Bluto GPA average, 0.00 ERA, 0.93 whip. One interesting thing about this game, besides the fact that, bear in mind, although Houston won 12-1 last night, they're 3-6 their last 9. A's 11-3 their last 14. And an amazing stat, only once since June 13th has Oakland lost back-to-back games. This is a consistent team with a good pitcher on the hill, obviously with a good team, but Houston's offense is iffy at best. If you take out the 12-run game they had last night and look at their last 10 games and what they scored, tell you what, right now, I'm taking Oakland at home in this game, plus the 130. You cannot pass up the value. And bear in mind, Oakland is at home as an underdog, and they're playing with 6-time revenge because the last 6 times Houston's went into Oakland, they beat them. You got a hot versus not with a good pitcher on the hill and a team that's dialed in to beat a nemesis at home. I love the value at plus 130 with Oakland tonight, Adam.
Tony George exclusively over at Docs Sports. I know you guys said that you've got a lot going on here in terms of your media push with videos and podcasts and things of that sort. What else you guys got going on over there?
Well, you know what? Get over to DocSports.com. They've been around since 1947 years in the business, Adam. You know, obviously, free picks on almost every game and every sport over there. Great articles. Videos from myself. I have a YouTube channel. Just search Tony George and Doc Sports for on YouTube. I put out a daily free play. 60% in free plays over the last year. Those are every day. So be sure and check it out. And if you want to sample me this weekend, do it for free. Just text the word Tony to 29022. That's the word Tony to 29022, Adam. And you can sign up on your phone, no credit card needed. You can open up an account on your smartphone and get a free $60 parked in your account to start out. And that $60 is used to purchase plays. Those plays are guaranteed to turn a profit, or you keep playing on the house until you do turn a profit. So that's a great deal. Check out Docs.
And you can follow Tony on Twitter at TGeorgeSports. Tony George, appreciate your time. Good to hear from you again, man. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Well, good show here today with Ken Barkley, also known as Locky Lockerson, and then also Tony George from Doc Sports. Again, kind of looking at that new school, old school dichotomy, and you know, there are a lot of different ways to skin this proverbial cat in this industry. And you know, we certainly try to bring a lot of different perspectives here to Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on our Monday edition of the show, we'll have Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. We actually have a Monday night game this week, Baltimore and Indianapolis in the preseason, but we'll mostly be recapping week two of the NFL preseason here, including probably the situation on the New England offensive line with Isaiah Wynn now out for the season with that torn Achilles. Joe, very, very adept at breaking down the trenches, so I'm sure we'll talk about that New England situation with him. Then the second half of that show, we'll chat with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our college football first look segment, where we'll break down another conference or two in the world of college football. So that's it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.